Hi, everyone. I'm your host, Celeste Moore, and you are listening to the Down and Dirty Podcast, aka the Double D's of Dating. This is a podcast for navigating the ins and outs of modern midlife dating. Here, we will discuss the challenges that men and women face in today's dating world. Like many industries, this one is forever changing, and I believe this platform will help those who need or want it. Today, it is the best time to take control of your desired outcome. Whether it is a marriage, significant other, life partner, or just to gain the confidence in dating once again. Every other week, we will dive in and talk about different viewpoints that seem to be challenges in today's dating arena. So let's get into today's episode. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Down and Dirty Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Celeste Moore. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone who continues to listen and tune in to these episodes. I truly hope that you're able to take away some nuggets that you've learned today back into your relationships. And please don't forget to leave a great review and 5-star rating. It helps the show with recognition, and it definitely, you know, in return helps everybody. So thank you. Thank you. I'm super excited to introduce you to my guest today. But before we dive in, I want to introduce you to her. For over 2 decades, Charna Cassell, LMFT, a trauma-trained psychotherapist and sexuality coach, has helped people heal, find pleasure in their bodies, and live vibrant lives. She's also an author, a teacher, and a podcast host. Every week on Laid Open Podcast, Charna shares her own stories, answers your questions, offers practical exercises, and interviews experts in the field of somatics, trauma, healing modalities, mindfulness, and the arts. Charna is currently creating online courses and working on a book, The Authentic. Yes. 6 Steps to Sexual Freedom. Charna's work and expertise has been featured in Oprah Magazine, TeenVogue.com, InStyle.com, PsychCentral.com, and AskMen.com. And she is in private practice in Oakland, California. Well, you have like some really juicy bits in there. So thank you so much for coming on to today's show. You know, I really enjoyed being on your show, and I just thought you'd be so perfect for the Down and Dirty.
Thank you. That was very, very thorough. A lot of information in there.
That was the shortened version. Girl, well, that's
hysterical.
Well, you have a lot of juicy stuff, like I said. So
yeah. I've been a little busy and consistent. Yeah.
So let me ask you, what was the driving force or forces behind kind of your career as a trauma-trained psychiatrist and sexuality coach?
So let me just correct one thing. I'm not a psychiatrist.
Sorry.
It's okay.
That's psychotherapist.
Okay.
I apologize.
Yeah. There are these distinctions that it's like to be kind of ethically aligned. I don't want someone to think I'm a doctor,
right?
Which is technically you go to med school to be a psychiatrist and you prescribe medicine and all that stuff. Anyways, that's okay.
I just read it wrong. So go for it.
No problem. So, you know, honestly, I was a somatic coach before becoming a psychotherapist. And I actually kind of fought being a psychotherapist, even when I was in school to do it. There wasn't this deep resonance because I'd been in psychotherapy since I was 14 and it didn't change anything in my nervous system. I was a very insightful young person, but I still lived with tremendous anxiety until I came to somatic work. And the person that I started working with was Stacey Haynes, and she started Generative Somatics. And she also taught at the Strozzi Institute, which is for embodied leadership. And so Generative Somatics is more focused on somatics and trauma. And so I came to that work. I found her book. It used to be called The Survivor's Guide to Sex. It's now called Healing Sex. And synchronistically, I'd met a new bestie in the city, and she was in a group with Stacey, and Stacey was her individual practitioner. And so I didn't understand what I was doing, but I was suddenly in this group for survivors and we did these weird exercises. And I started to see a nervous system freeze that I'd always lived with started to thaw out. I started to be able to have different kinds of boundaries. There was a reduction in some of my anxiety. And when she left her individual practice to go teach at the Strozzi Institute, it was a no-brainer for me to just follow her and to keep studying with her, because I just wanted something to be different inside my body and inside my mind. And before working with her, I didn't understand how sex and intimacy could coexist. And after doing that, right? Because without boundaries, how do you even be in relationship, right? Without feeling incredibly, incredibly overwhelmed. I mean, you see this all the time, that people will just stuff their needs, not express their feelings or their needs, and then they're gone. And the other person's like, what just happened? And so the cut and run is very familiar if you don't have boundaries and you, you know, can't allow yourself to be connected and say no at the same time. So I was building all these embodied relationship skills through that work, and it transformed my life studying at the Strozzi Institute. That used to be a much more thorough, longer training of one course would be 3 days and every 6 weeks over 8 months. So that was one course. And I studied there for 5 years. And simultaneously, I continued to study there while I was in school for psychotherapy. But like I said, there just wasn't the same resonance, because, you know, I knew people who'd had bad experiences with psychotherapists as teenagers. So I was wary and really sat throughout my studies as a psychotherapist or in school for counseling psychology, questioning what I was going to get. And what I came out with on the other side, and I am glad that I became a psychotherapist, is that somatic work, I see it as like somatic work are the tiles and psychotherapeutic training is the grout, right? So that there's a different orientation that I have to the world. I see everything. I experience the body. You know, my nervous system really changed through somatic work. And there's something really important about psychotherapeutic training around boundaries and understanding the container and understanding certain kinds of basics. But regarding trauma, I do encourage people to find somebody to work with that works with the nervous system, because it wasn't some kind of strategic plan for me to become a psychotherapist. It was just like I had an interest in working with teenagers, working with sexuality, and working with the body. And someone suggested, you know, you might want the license to make you more legitimate or something, you know. And I was like, okay, I'll jump through this hoop. Even though I'm not the most conventional human, I will jump through this hoop. And what I feel like staying in a program, getting licensed was an 8-year process.
Wow.
And it built containment in my system, which I didn't have that level of energetic or physical containment. I trusted my intuition, and that directed me towards lots of things throughout my life. But this was like a labor of I'm reluctant to say labor of love, but it was a laborious learning process, and it taught me how to stick with something for future gain.
Yeah. I mean, so just curious, what was your interest in teens? Is it because of something you experienced as yourself as a teenager?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'd always wanted to work with teenagers. I'd worked as a teenager. I was a youth leader. I volunteered at a runaway teen shelter. So I'd had experience with that population and felt like that was such a vulnerable population to work with. I'd also done a rites of passage group with 11 to 14 year olds. And it's kind of like, okay, so this is a period of time in your life when you're not empowered, usually, right? You don't have choice. You're stuck at home under someone else's rule. And wanting to give them resources and wanting to, you're still plastic and flexible. So wanting to build them up and help them develop boundaries and things like that, the ability to say what they want and identify what their sensations are and their feelings are before habits get reified in their system, right? And it's a really satisfying thing when a teen is responsive to the work I'm doing. It's pretty remarkable how quickly they can develop a new tool. Versus, you know, adults, we have more formed rigid habits. But actually working with teenagers, what I found was sometimes working with a parent who is mentally ill, who wouldn't respect my boundaries, it was so hard that I actually, that was one of the reasons I backed away from continuing to work with teenagers. And it was heartbreaking because you know that you're maybe one of the only lifelines for this kid. So that was a hard decision. I still sometimes work with teens, but not so much anymore.
Yeah. And I think you said something pretty pronounced in that the last question I asked you, but you talk about asking for the things that you want, right? And how mm-hmm. powerful that is. How does this, when you ask for something that you want, are you talking about sexually usually, right? Or are you talking about anything based in a relationship?
Yeah, I see sex as a microcosm. So to be very clear, somebody can come to me for sex therapy and really the issues that they're dealing with in bed are going to show up all over the rest of their life. And often, right? I will do a physical practice with someone and what gets revealed. And when I say physical, I'm using martial arts-based practices to rewire the brain through the body by doing a physical practice that creates just enough stress that people's habitual patterns will reveal themselves. It's like their belief system reveals itself through the way they end up doing this physical exercise. And there's a lot of metaphor and it's very subtle, but I'll ask the question based on what I see and how they physically extend their arm, how they physically make contact. And it's usually accurate, I will say, right? So they'll show themselves. It's like, oh, this is my habit. Whether they believe they have really excellent boundaries, and then when I do the exercise, they freeze up and they can't say no, it'll be revealed what is true.
Yeah, boundaries is something I was never taught as a child or a teenager.
Yeah. Well, oh, and I didn't mean to sort of come back to your question about asking for what you want.
Right.
Right. So making requests, approaching someone, it's something that we do all the time in very, you know, neutral situations. My mom tells a story about when I was 2 and I said, I don't like my eggs. We were in a restaurant and she said, well, so do something about it. Because my mom she wasn't going to complain. She was never going to say she didn't like her food. So that's like a seemingly minor moment, but she also froze up and didn't have a voice in relationships. Mm-hmm. And she was salted multiple times throughout her life, right? So I got up and I went up to the waitress and I said, I don't like my eggs, you know? And I think I had more capacity there, but then certain things got trained out of me as a result of trauma, right? So when a freeze takes over, it becomes a lot harder to feel yourself if you leave your body or to articulate what you do or don't want, mm-hmm. whether it's a sexual situation or not.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
Any kind of overwhelming situation. For some people, even saying, I don't like my eggs or can you, redo this steak is a stressful situation because they're so conflict avoidant.
Yeah. I have a family member who is like that. Avoid all, like even almost all conversation because mm-hmm. does not want to have any conflict whatsoever. So mm-hmm. I don't know where that comes from. Somewhere down our lineage, especially with a sibling.
where did you grow up? What area?
So I grew up all over the world, the United States, Washington State, Florida, Vegas, California. So mm-hmm. kind of everywhere.
So what's interesting, I find that whatever our parents, even if we didn't grow up in a region, mm-hmm. What your parents' training is, and I don't know if they were from the East Coast or the Midwest, and there's like, suck it up, but it's an interesting thing how our parents' culture can just insert itself into our beingness, even if we're in a totally different area of the world.
That is interesting. I'd have to learn more about that because... Yeah. I mean, my mom was, her father was in the Air Force. So she lived all over the world. Uh-huh. My father lives multiple places, but not because of that. So yeah. Interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, in terms of your sister, just like, I think we make these decisions before we're even verbal. We get a sense. We're like, okay, I'm going to be the funny one. I'm going to take your pain away. I'm going to not have any needs. You know, we just assess these things at a very young age and play that role out.
Yeah, surprisingly enough, I will jump off this topic in a minute, but I had a woman who I didn't know there was even this practice who read my body, and I'm not sure exactly her oh my goodness, title, if you will. And she pretty much like went back to like my 3-year-old self and pretty much said what it was, how I was with my parents and the situation. That's who my personality was because of I wanted to not ruffle the feathers, the people pleaser. And that was like that good girl so that that's how I would receive love. And it's so crazy. Never in my life, you know, I'm almost 47 years old. And to hear something like that is really kind of powerful. But it was almost, it's okay to not play that role anymore. It's okay to own who I am today and get outside of that. So.
And so it resonated where you were oh yeah, that totally is when that seed was planted. And then you think about it, if you're doing something to reinforce that all day, every day from 3 to 40, that habit lives in your, you know, your muscle memory, in your tissue. And so the way to undo it is you need to be in a new practice. And we often think, oh, I'll just read a book. But the idea of being in a physical practice to create new muscle memory, which can override what the habit is what I found was the key.
Okay. And that's in the somatic healing or what is that? What
you mean? I mean, you know, there's different ways. Like, so one of my teachers, he was a martial arts master, and that was where he developed a lot of these practices using Aikido, certain principles of Aikido. And but someone else might find liberation and new habit through dancing. Someone else, you know, there's different ways, but you doing body work as well. There are different kinds of body work, but the principle of the body work that I call it trauma release body work. And I mix what Richard Strozzi Heckler and Stacey Haynes taught me, as well as multiple other people. And it's using breath, which highlights places in the body that hold trauma, which can show up as tension, pain in the body, or numbness and blankness. And so those places are either they're not occupied or there's frozen energetic impulses. So something that didn't get to be fully expressed. Like if you're a good girl, you're probably holding back a lot of no's or punches, or maybe there was a flight response, maybe there wasn't. So somebody might not occupy their legs. And so doing physical practices that help you reoccupy certain parts of the body and feel them in a new way creates a memory and an access point that you can then draw on in the future. So it's, I think of the body work as creating a new imprint that may not have been available previously that then allows a new action and a new way of responding.
That's amazing. I love that. I think that, you know, I've never heard of the physical aspect of it. And it makes so much sense, right? Because that's where, like you said, that's where you're creating that new memory, that muscle memory. I've only heard about, you know, you talk about it, you figure it out. And I mean, there's multiple practices, like you said, but that's really, I think that's fascinating. Hopefully everybody here has learned something. I know I have. So, yeah. So I have a lot of like, I know that you tackle like so many things, and you talked a little bit about trauma. How does trauma affect libido?
Oh, gosh, that's a big question. But you can think about, and this is why, I mean, it's kind of the thesis of the book that I've been working on, is really defining sexual trauma in a much broader sense than we think of. When someone says sexual trauma, you think of child sexual abuse or sexual assault. And the way I'm holding it is that we all have a life force that moves through us, right? That allows us to take action, that allows us to be exuberant, that allows us to take a stand or to move towards something that we want. And when your life force is constricted, so the things that constrict a life force, that's what, when I think of trauma, I think of you're growing up in a household where there's mental illness, where there's addiction, where there's violence, physical, sexual, emotional. You're a person of color in, you know, in a culture that supports white supremacy. Like there's either a lack of safety or a way that we believe, like being a good girl, you probably, you know, hold a certain amount of tension in your throat and jaw because you had to swallow a lot of words that weren't going to be good and nice and pretty. And so we believe we have to be a certain way in order to stay connected or be loved in our family, culture, or religious community. And so all those ways of being create a habit in our tissue, a holding in our physical body, and often a constriction in some part of our body. So what forms trauma is not the incident itself, but it's how we respond to it and also our lack of support in processing it. So an unfortunately common story is someone has had some form of child sexual abuse. They may approach a parent or somebody and their parent reacts angry or dismissive. Or maybe they don't approach anyone because they're afraid and they keep it to themselves. And so all of that overwhelm, so it's when your system is so overwhelmed, it can't process something. And then it ends up being like frozen in your tissue. And then it just lays dormant to be processed at some later date. And that's what a trigger is, right? Mm-hmm. So when in the moment, in present time, you have a bigger reaction than a situation calls for, it's really a dormant experience that you didn't have support in processing. It suddenly rushes into present time. It doesn't know the difference between the past, being a five-year-old and being 47.
Wow.
I know I just kind of went to seven different places instead of fully answering your question.
Okay.
So coming back to trauma, you said, what is trauma or what's the question again?
So I think what I'm curious about is libido.
And oh, libido. Yes. Sorry. Thank you.
Okay.
So how it relates to libido, I'll give a handful of examples. So let's say there was actual genital contact sexual trauma, right? Versus all these other kinds of trauma that cause restriction in your system, which prevents full sexual self-expression. Okay. So anything that's going to constrict your system, think about that. What is libido? It is sexual energy that wants to move through you. If your body is numb because it's like, I don't get to feel that part of me, that's dangerous. I don't get to express that thing. It's not nice. I don't want to be an angry Black woman. I don't want to be a bad girl, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
We don't get to choose, I want to express my libido. It's like passion, anger, grief, joy. It's all the same channel. So if you twist it and shut it down because you're not allowed to have emotions or needs in your family, then how does libido, get expressed? So more specifically, one person experiences sexual trauma and they may experience turn-on at the same time, right? Our bodies are physically responsive if they're stimulated. Mm-hmm. There can be terror and turn-on. There can even be orgasm. And then there can be shame because of that, right? Anytime there's powerlessness, there's often shame,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Even if it's momentary, even if someone bounces out of it really quickly. So often with sexual trauma, there's shame. And one of the things we want to do is we don't want to feel something, so we'll shut it down. So someone could be even, 30 years later, anytime they feel turn on, they also experience shame or they experience that past experience. So then they shut it down, right? So, someone else, I'll use this example. So a man mm-hmm. may not be able to get an erection. Maybe there was abuse and they came when they were abused and they feel so much shame for that experience. They don't allow themselves pleasure. Or someone else might even have a hard time. If it's another form of trauma that has nothing to do with sex, but it's creating depression in your system, and depression often can be anger turned inward, right? Depression is, you can think of it as hypoarousal, which is hyperarousal is an increase in sensation, nervous system hyperarousal. Hypoarousal is a decrease in sensation. So when we get dysregulated, when we're feeling a lot in our bodies and we get overwhelmed, we'll go into hyper or hypoarousal. Often people who go into hypoarousal will shoot very, very quickly, sometimes imperceptibly, into a hyperaroused state, which is like, anxiety. I don't want to feel that. Computer shuts down. Too many tabs open. Computer shuts down. And so that sleepy, dissociated, numb, or depressed state, it's really hard to access turn on and feel. Hyperarousal is where turn on lives. But if you can't tolerate a lot of sensation in your body, it makes it very hard to be turned on and be okay with being turned on.
Man, I feel like an asshole because... I have a story.
Okay.
It's very, very quick. And listen, I'm apologizing to everybody listening to this because it's not who I am. This is just something I did when I was 25. So I was naive. And yeah, I experienced this with someone I just started to date. Mm. And we met where I worked through college, and that was at a strip club. Mm-hmm. So automatically, I don't like date anybody outside of that. But he was like my age. He lived in LA where I lived. And we kind of just, we're very attracted to each other. Let's just go out and have fun. Well, we went on a few dates and kissing was great, whatever. So when we got down to let's have some sex, and he couldn't get hard. Well, I ran to my bathroom and said, well, here, take a Viagra. Mm-hmm. And, you're 25 and like the kissing's mm-hmm. good. Like, what's going on? You know? And then he came really fast. And then I was like, I did a really bad thing. I kicked him out. Uh-huh. So it was very like, I know every guy that hears that, they're like, oh my God, what a terrible person you are. Oh. But it was just like, I can't deal with that. I was like, of course I was young, naive, didn't understand. And I feel so bad moving on with this guy. Probably had some things that he was just very nervous about or maybe a trauma. And I'm not laughing at that, but just like a slap in the face. Like, oh my God, what'd you do?
Well, so let's use that. Let's work with that a little bit. So first of all, I hear you reflecting, having learned, you're in a different place. You have this new information that you're able to integrate, and you go, oh, wow, if I could go back, I would do that differently.
100%.
Right? I would have a different level of patience and understanding. And so just for the male listeners out there, the female listeners out there, anyone listening, there is something which I would call demi-cock, which demisexual people, some people really need more emotional connection before mm-hmm. they can get turned on and want to have sex with you. So there's the stereotype that men are supposed to, or people with penises are supposed to be ready to go, right? Always hard and ready. And if they're attracted to you, they should just be able to get it going. Mm-hmm. But he also didn't know you yet, right? So there could be one, it could be that piece, like I need more emotional connection, or I need things to go slower, or there could be some kind of, maybe depression. Maybe he was on an antidepressant and it made it hard to get hard. Mm-hmm. There can be a variety of things. And maybe he knew, oh no, I come quickly. I'm really insecure about that. Here's this woman that I'm, I want to impress. And then he couldn't even get hard because he was nervous about how quick he was going to come. Mm-hmm. So all of that, all of those things are possibilities. And I just want people to know that, even if not getting hard or ejaculating faster than you want to happen, you can be in mindfulness masturbation practices and develop the capacity to shift that.
Yeah.
I had a client whose partner broke up with him because of that, because of ejaculating really quickly. And he worked on it and is happily married now.
Yeah. That's amazing. So. Yes. All of that can be, I'm sure, if you work on something with the right people, you can figure it out. So yeah, I will never name names. I will always sometimes use my experiences because I think it fit pretty well for that one. So mm-hmm. You live and you learn. And like you said, I'm glad I know what I know now. And having you as a guest and having these amazing people that are experts in this field, not only does the audience learn, I'm constantly learning. And I just think this is like my school. I love it.
Yeah, I was saying, I had this great author on yesterday, and I was saying to somebody that I feel like it's grad school. Like I just, because I'm like, oh, sorry, I don't have plans. I can't make plans this weekend. I have another book to read.
It's like yes.
A lot. Yeah.
A lot to learn. I love it. So I hear that you are newly dating.
Yeah.
Some little mouse told me. I am as well. So I think it's kind of interesting how even like, I would say 15 years ago, when mm-hmm. Match was really popular and some other mm-hmm. things. I mean, some things have changed, some things have not mm-hmm. with the online dating world. But I know that I have a difficulty. I don't know how you categorize yourself sexually, but I am mm-hmm. bisexual. And mm-hmm. I know that dating is quite, I find it's a challenge for me because mm-hmm. of that. I think it's great because I'm attracted to both sexes. But at the same time, I find that when I bring it up with like a very hetero guy that's like, yeah, I get to have threesomes and like, this is so hot. And like, no, dude, that's not it. Or, you know, dating a woman, I really have only dated a woman very short term. And I wasn't quite sure about it because I've never kind of been in the reins of that. So it's very interesting to me that like I have to put out, I don't put anything for my sexuality.
Oh, interesting. What would you mind me asking what app you're on, or do you want to hear?
Yeah,
that?
I'm on Hinge.
Okay.
But I think so, I should Bumble. I don't know.
You can just not put anything, but yeah. Then you still, but you get matched with both.
I don't have any women that are on there, and I find it, I don't know. I'm just struggling with that. And maybe I just need to like put it out there. So I don't know. Well, what's your thoughts on?
Well, let me ask you. So when you don't put anything, is that because you're trying to avoid the creepy couples and the guy who's going to be titillated by you being bisexual?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that over the years, and just so for the record, I didn't start really dating men until I was in my late 20s.
Okay.
And when I did, my world was so female centric. I worked at Good Vibrations, a worker owned sex toy store. I danced 6 days a week and I did yoga, and it was all women back then. Yoga was not like hot guys in hot yoga. And so I didn't even know where to meet them. And so I asked a male colleague at Good Vibrations. I was like, okay, I'm ready to have sex with a man. And he was like, put that on, it was Craigslist back then, right?
Stop.
I know, it was such a mistake. It was, yeah, it was so naive. And then OkCupid used to be called Salon. So this is me in my, you know, like late 20s. I was like, oh, I don't drink. Where do you meet men? So I've been on dating sites for quite a while.
Okay.
And I've gone back and forth between being transparent about being bisexual or being queer. Because ultimately, like you said, I wish I wasn't as attracted to masculine energy, but I am. I like pretty, you know, almost stereotypical masculine guys. I'm very attracted to like bearded, hairy chested outdoorsmen and masculine energy in women, you know. But at the same time, I really do need a certain level of like queerness. Often I've dated men who have dated a number of lesbians, or people who I call hasbians.
Interesting.
So I think that if you're transparent about that, you can sift through the creepy dudes who are like immediately like, what turns you on?
Right.
And actually attract people, especially, where are you? I'm in the Bay Area.
I'm in Austin.
Oh. Okay. Well, I mean, Austin, probably it's still a pretty progressive part of Texas, but I can see why you're a little more reluctant there. Because the Bay Area, there's just, you know, there's a lot more flexibility. But some of you Austin guys, come on, don't you hear that? I like that.
Right.
Colorado. I was just in Montana.
Yeah.
Or like Oregon. The Bay Area is not totally my cup of tea.
What is the Bay Area like?
Oh, I'm gonna put a stereotype out there. And I think your Austin fans might giggle. I really do want a level of consciousness and awareness, but not so, and this is a therapist talking, right? But not so over-therapized that there's just like this heavy jargon and like eye gazing. And, you know, it's.
Yeah, you want that happy medium.
Yeah, yeah. And I think sometimes there can be an extreme of that. It's like men who have done enough work to take responsibility and be accountable and have some skills, but it doesn't become their whole identity. And I like, even though I support a lot of polyamorous and non-monogamous couples or individuals and help people create relationships that work for them that are very unconventional, that are outside of any boxes, I totally support it all in theory. In practice, I'm more monogamous because I'd rather have five friends who help me garden than five people I have sex with, or, you know, or have five creative projects that I put energy into than five people I'm processing with.
Mm.
And so I think that the Bay Area has so much freedom that there's a lot of ethical non-monogamy occurring. And I might like a little bit more of a monogamous, I'm a funny mix of like very unconventional and have some conventional desires, very simple desires, you know?
I'm the same.
So
yeah. I'm kind of in the middle with that too.
Yeah. So it's different. Sometimes I'll put, I'm on Hinge too. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll put bisexual and sometimes I won't. I think on OkCupid, if you do that, you're more likely to attract people who are like couples looking for somebody.
Yeah.
So I think I've just tried different things over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. No, I wish I kind of was along one line of sexuality because I feel like it would just wouldn't be as complicated. So,
yeah, I mean, what I hear is, you know, so just kind of trusting, like if you're transparent and you put who you are out there, you are more likely to get what you want. And so there are different times when I think I've wanted to dodge more than, you know, if I would say do the work that has you feel safe and discerning and getting the, you know, being selective about who you respond to.
Right.
The it's less true. You hold it as an issue, like for me, it's an afterthought of like, mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, this is part of my history and this is part of who I am. And if somebody has some weird reaction to it versus just like, okay, then that gives me a lot of good information.
Yeah, true. I mean, I'm a dating coach. Like, I understand. Like,
totally.
We all have our own issues, right?
Yeah, there's complexity to it. And I hear that. I hear, like, I wish that, you know, oh, it would be easier to just exist in this one simple box. And unfortunately, I straddle multiple. Pun intended.
I love it. So I know you have it. You said just recently jumped on an app again. So you said you have gone on dates or you haven't?
I'm actually going to go on a date tonight. I haven't gone on dates. I've been talking to a handful of people. So we'll see. You know, I'm just kind of, I'm in this place. I just got back from Montana camping by myself for a week.
Oh.
And as I drove to the airport, I was crying from gratitude. And I just felt, you know, that feeling when you're in new love and you're just so in love and you're full and you're, oh, and soft and open and it feels so good. And I felt that and I was like, oh, this is such a good feeling. And there's no object. It's not about a man. It's just a state of being.
Yeah.
And, you know, even as I describe it, I can feel it and it feels really good. And I have so many little learning communities that I'm in right now, these tiny groups. I'm on all these group threads trying to organize our meetings. And I feel very full of friendship, creative projects. And so I'm kind of like, I do want partnership,
mm-hmm.
and there's no urgency around it, you know? And so I was talking to someone yesterday and I could feel I was like, wow, I already feel pressure from this person. And this is our first conversation. And I'm like, yeah, that's not really a fit. Like he's clearly, I respect that he wants partnership and he wants it kind of yesterday. And he kind of, it felt like, well, if you had kids and you were as busy as you are, then that would be okay. But since you don't have kids, like you're a workaholic.
He didn't think judgy.
Well, that was the funny thing. It's like it was like the whole conversation, it felt like kind of judgment after judgment. And I was like, oh, this is really interesting. There's a lot of tone of judgment. And I really get that that's probably his fear of the past repeating itself or not getting what he wants or whatever. And I was just like, you know, not feeling it.
Not.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like you don't have to go on four dates before you realize this is not something I want to pursue.
Yeah. So I have a question on that chemistry, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Prior to being certified as an image consultant, I was certified as a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that we learned is they can be perfect on paper. Oh my God, this is like the perfect match. Da, 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 da. But chemistry is something you cannot. Okay, I'm looking in a crystal ball and this is going to work out. Now, you just said something that I truly believe, like chemistry is like pretty instant, or at least for women. But I don't know. I've also been told, and I want your thoughts on this, can chemistry grow?
Oh, yeah. So, well, this is a complicated topic. I have a lot of thoughts on it. The short answer would be, I think yes.
Okay.
The longer answer is you can't force something. I have multiple experiences around this that may contradict each other. I've met someone who I thought was insanely physically attractive. And then he kisses me and I feel nothing, you know? I was partnered with someone and lived with them and we were on that marriage trajectory. And we even had amazing, like, at times, incredible sex. And I really loved him. And there just wasn't a certain chemistry out of bed, that like humor, like a lightness, a rapport, like the kind of rapport I have with my favorite people. There's deep connection and humor. We can move fluidly between those two states. I didn't laugh with this guy. Mm-hmm. And that was it. I just really didn't see us together when we were 80. The guy that I lost my boy virginity to, my choiceful boy virginity, such a stupid expression.
I love it.
The first man that I had choiceful penetrative sex with was someone I worked with at Good Vibrations. And he's a male friend who I chose, like the 14-year-old in me was like, I had to lose my virginity. I'd choose you because I feel safe with you. And he was not conventionally attractive. Like he would say that about himself. He was funny as all hell. He was deep. He studied theology. Totally interesting, quirky guy. And I was smitten with him once we started this physical connection. And I would have totally gone there with him. But he was insecure and kind of cut it off with me because he was afraid that of like, oh, no, you can't really be into me.
Mm.
So, you know, I've had a lot of different experiences, but I do think that when you have a heart connection with someone, and I think at different ages, it can be different, right? You're looking for different things.
Mm-hmm.
And chemistry, I think chemistry, the people that I have the most intense sexual chemistry with over the years, what I have come, my theory, it might be a little too woo-woo for an Austin audience, but I'll share it anyways.
They're from all over.
So it's just that there is karma. There is some kind of past life or other timeline connection, and you are having, you're madly in love with them at some other place in time, or having amazing sex with them at some other place in time, or in deep pain with them. But there's this intense karma that gets ignited once you have sex. So when you have sex really quickly with someone, which if the turn on is magnetic between the two of you, it's more likely to happen faster. It's also more likely to fizzle out, right? It's often not as sustainable when it's like so, so intense. So I feel like you need enough chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't, this one partner that I lived with that I didn't have humor chemistry with, like there were moments of that, but on paper, we had all the same values. It was like check, 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 right? It looked right, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. They're your long lasting person. Yeah.
I think we have multiple people throughout our lives. It's definitely a journey and it's definitely a learning process. But I always wonder too, you know, like, okay, like you go on a first date and it could be like, it could just be shit or it could be, okay, it's decent enough. And so and this is another thing. This comes from a very professional matchmaker. If there's nothing that's standing out saying no, 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 then go on another date because you're giving that person like another chance. If it's, well, I don't say chance, another experience to have to possibly open up or whatever. And it kind of makes sense. Like if there's no red flags or there's nothing, but you're not so like, oh my God, this is the person, you know, that sometimes we do that.
It's an interesting thing. I have in the Bay Area, it's so expensive to live by yourself that in my 20s, I had a lot of different roommates and I had a house that I was the leaseholder and I had five rooms. And there was a woman that the minute I met her, and not in a sexual way, but just friend chemistry, you know, those people you're like,
yes,
immediate. And then there was another person I had move in just because we needed to fill the room, was not drawn to her. It was kind of, you know, like I felt a little rubbed by her, actually. But what evolved, it was such a good learning experience for me, was that the person that I had the instant intense friend chemistry with, I ended up actually feeling pulled on too much by her. And this other person that was more kind of almost like a rabbit in headlights, a deer in headlights, either way. Very intellectual, kind of kept to herself. Through conflict, we actually created more intimacy and a longer lasting friendship. And so it taught me like, oh, maybe it's not all about that instant, you know, intuition that we think we have about another person, and that people will grow on you. You can become really enamored with somebody. Your heart will, you know, start to expand over time, given time.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky one. There's so many humans out there, and you're a beautiful woman. I'm sure a ton of men want to date you, and you can't. I don't have that much free time. I cannot.
Exactly.
There have been times when I've gone on multiple dates in a day, you know, a day in the week, you know? And, but so for me, it's kind of like there is a certain efficiency need. If I'm writing with someone and I don't feel really sparked or interested in what they're writing back to me, or there's not enough of an interest, if someone's like, do you want to get together? It's like, no, my time is too precious.
Right.
Right. So I think you need to use the discernment that you've developed over a lifetime. And I don't know about you, but the idea of like, well, there was no no's, but there was no yes, that would be hard for me to prioritize one of my precious free evenings to go out again with that person. I understand the theory.
Right. It's true. I mean, I'm in the same situation. So it's got to take a little bit of, you've got to pique my interest. You've got to make me want to learn something more about you. And that's the thing too, guys, like be a little mysterious, right? Don't throw up all the stuff in one date. That is such a turnoff. Nobody wants to hear it. So I don't throw up on the first date with word vomit.
Can you be more specific? Because are you meaning that they're telling you all of their childhood wounds? Are you
They're telling you everything that you need to know in that hour of their whole life story, of where they're at, what's going on. I mean, no, I want you just to go on the date. I want you to see if there's anything that's interesting about this person. Pay attention to their body language. Pay attention to how they interact with you to see if that's a person that you want to be around. You know, and see if you guys have fun together. Just have a good time, even if it's a half an hour, right? So,
well, and I would say fun, but also, you know, if you're really attracted to them, are you experiencing, is it like an anxious turn on, or are you able to also feel calm around them?
Mm-hmm.
Because calm and ease it's underrated. I think it's a really important thing to be able to feel that with another person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's tricky because sometimes I'm so comfortable around you. It's like I've known you my whole life. It's like, oh, family patterns. You're attracted to what's familiar.
Yes. I want to break that shit.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I have one last question and then I'm going to let you just tell everybody about your name of your podcast. I think I said it, but let's reiterate it so people can go listen because I think it's such a great podcast. What was one of your favorite dates and what was it?
My gosh.
Oh, these questions.
Let's see. Oh, that's a hard one. I'm gonna need a minute. You know, it's so, what's crazy is that nothing is popping up. But I can tell you, if I had to do more of an impressionistic watercolor, and maybe a real memory will pop forward, a specific date, but it would include a feeling, you know, it would include a feeling state. And that is laughter, for sure. Like a playfulness, a kind of a giddiness. There's generosity. There's good food, some kind of physical activity. Like I personally love dancing. If you do couples dancing, like, you know, as long as you like to be touched by that person.
Yeah.
You know, like, but the mood is soft. Like having the other person feel supported, not controlled. Like I really like it when someone plans something and has me feel, oh, I'm just in charge of everything in my life. And I'm one of those women. It's like, oh, thank you. It's a relief to not have to make all the decisions, but to not feel controlled. So I can appreciate it's like leading when you're dancing, that there's a lot for, if we're talking about heterosexual or, you know, men navigating these things, for you to be thinking about, to allow a woman to surrender and be led.
Yeah.
And I would say there is curiosity on the person's part. There is space. There is some vulnerability. But like you said, it's not like everything is dumped on the table. So there's spaciousness and appreciating and just being. And then the chemistry is palpable in the space. And so it feels kind of warm and tingly in my body. And yeah.
That sounds amazing. And this, for you men out there, Charna said it all. This is what women want. We want to be able to drop in our femininity, and whether or not it's actual hetero or not heterosexual. There's the feminine and masculine energy, and you have to do the dance, right? And for all of us women that are leading our lives every day in the masculine, we don't want to plan anything. We want you to do it. We just want to drop into this energy and this space of vulnerability and comfortability and have a good time. So take that away. That was beautiful.
Yeah. One thing I'll add, you know, what I appreciate when a man is sensitive to awareness of whether I might feel safe or not safe, you know, because oblivion to that is just like a red flag for me. But if they're like, you know, if you feel safe, if you're comfortable with it, I could pick you up. I personally prefer to not drive because I didn't drive for the first 21 years of my life. And then again, for another 17 years, I didn't drive. So for me, that can be stressful. Mm. So I actually really like being driven. Okay. And so, but to have the person be aware that there might be a safety concern for me or someone else.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of women would not do that. Mm-hmm. They would not. But once I feel comfortable with someone and we've talked, and if I have the option, yeah, I'll ask my body if it's a yes or a no. But often I will say, yeah, absolutely. I would love for you to pick me up. Thank you.
Yeah.
So like giving them that option, but also being sensitive to where they might be coming from. Use some empathy and try to imagine what it's like for a woman having a big strange man come to their house.
Yeah, agreed. Mm-hmm. Well, where can everybody find your podcast, your book, anything else that you want to talk about really fast and we can...
Yeah. Well, the book isn't out there. The book is on my computer. Oh, so
that is...
Don't
wait,
try...
that's... yes. That's a work don't... in progress. Sorry.
Yes. Don't try to find it. It's it's mine. Laid Open, LAID Open Podcast. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts, or you can go to one of my websites is Charna, Charna Cassell, CASSELL.com. You can read my blog there. You can join my newsletter and find my podcast postings there. And if you want to read more about my private practice, it's passionatelife.org. And I imagine that'll be in the show notes.
Yes, yes. It'll all be there.
And then please, if you're interested, you can follow me on Instagram at Laid Open Podcast. I do a little bit of TikToking, and I also have a Facebook page. So Laid Open Podcast on Facebook.
Amazing. So, yeah. Well, it's such a pleasure again to speak with you. You just are a plethora of knowledge, and I wish we could talk all day, but maybe another podcast.
Yeah, thank you.
I can pick your brain. Thank
Absolutely.
You so much, Charna. Good
thank
luck with your date.
Oh, thanks. I hope so. We both like David Sedaris. So I was like, at least we might laugh together. So we'll see.
Amazing. We'll have a wonderful time. I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. Come and hang out with me on Instagram at Celeste Moore Image. Let me know your thoughts on today's episode because I always love hearing from you all. You can find all the links and resources in the show notes of the episode on my website, celestemoore.com. Okay, that's all for now. I'll see you in the next episode. See you next time, friends.